Beasley, cash me out.
There you go. Nice.
Bert Horford catches, kicks, Dort for the win. It's good. Pokuševski catch fire three, and that is good. For the lead, Gilgeous-Alexander got it. The Thunder lead by one.
Hello, everybody. And welcome to the Uncontested Podcast postgame show. I'm your host, Justin, as Oklahoma City falls to the Philadelphia 76ers 93-117. We are proudly part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and the official podcast of BoomtownHoops.com. If you don't already, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and drop that 5-star rating. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook for all your Thunder content needs. Another great show live on the Locker Room app. If you haven't already, go download the Locker Room app. You can hang out with us, ask questions, jump up on stage, interact with us following each and every Thunder game. And of course, tomorrow night, Sunday, 9 p.m., don't miss our weekly live stream on YouTube and Facebook to break down everything Big Thunder news. Tonight, we had a lot of Thunder news in and of itself. Baze is back. Dort is back. The Thunder might be signing Gabriel Deck. We hit on all of it. So without any further ado, let's get you to the show. What is up, everybody? We are coming at you live on the Locker Room app. As the Oklahoma City Thunder fall to the Philadelphia 76ers 93-117. I want to start right from the get-go just by going through some of the counting stats from tonight's game, because when you look at the final score and you look at the stats, it's really easy to understand the story of tonight's game. Oklahoma City shoots 50% from the floor, which is better than the Sixers, who shot 46.8. Oklahoma City shoots 40% from three versus the Sixers, who shoot 31.6. Now, that said, Oklahoma City only took 20 attempts compared to 38 for the Sixers. That's obviously a very big difference. Free throws, Oklahoma City shoots 47% compared to the Sixers, 68. That one hurts. Oklahoma City, 9 of 19 from the free throw line compared to 17 of 25 for the Sixers. Rebounds, pretty even, 45 for OKC, 47 for Philly. Assists, pretty even, 21, OKC, 24 for Philly. And then the turnovers. Oklahoma City with 23 turnovers, leading to 32 points for Philadelphia compared to 10 turnovers, leading to 9 points for Philly. If you want to know the story of this game, it is turnovers and, to a slightly lesser extent, free throws. Oklahoma City played well outside of being careless with the basketball. They shot well. They rebounded well. They moved the ball well. They just threw the ball away too many times, way too many times. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One, this is a young team. This is the depth of roster exploration, whatever Presti euphemism you'd like to use for tanking. That's what this is. Lots of young guys. But the headline coming into tonight's game is the return of Darius Baisley and Lu Dort. And while it was great to see those two play basketball again, I think it had a big part to do with all those turnovers for OKC. Quite literally, if you want to look at Darius Baisley's stat line, Baze, my guy, 9 turnovers of the Thunder's 23, 9 turnovers for Darius. Not great. Outside of that, though, it felt like he played a good game. 7 of 12 from the floor for 17 points, 3 of 4 from behind the arc, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. Welcome back, Darius Baisley. Let's just maybe try to not throw the ball away so much. Baze came out cooking right from the get-go. I think it was the first 6 points were off Baisley's threes back-to-back to start the game. Looked really comfortable. Looked really solid. Looked locked in. I think, you know, a lot of times in the past, we were talking about this a little bit in our uncontested group chat. you see a guy come back from a long-term injury like this, and you expect him to take it easy. You expect him to, you know, not play a ton of minutes, not look like his old self, all those kind of things. That wasn't Baisley. That wasn't Baisley tonight. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with, we've talked a lot about, and if you follow the Thunder much this season, it feels like they're being really conservative with injury management. I don't think, as some might surmise, that OKC is making up injuries. I think they're just being really conservative. I think if this were another season, you probably see Baze come back sooner. You probably see Baisley come back a week or two. I don't know. You see him come back a lot sooner, and you see him kind of ease back into the action. And I think that the Thunder just instead waited till he was back to 100%. And that's what we saw tonight. We saw 100% healthy Baisley, I think. And it had some high highs. However, much like we've talked most of this season, Baze continues to just kind of be a roller coaster. And tonight was no different. 3 of 4 from behind the arc, like I mentioned, but 9 turnovers. That's the good and the bad with Baze. What I like to see, though, again, was his confidence and comfortability, being able to jump back in after missing, I think it was 16 games. Like that's no joke. That's a long stretch. So it was good to see Baze back on the court. Good to see him balling again. I hope he continues to get some good minutes for OKC moving forward. The next guy we have to talk about, the return of Lugans Dort. Oh, sweet Lou. I've missed you. I've missed watching you play basketball. Lou was everywhere, as we'd expect. His injury, a concussion protocol, didn't expect that to affect his on-court play like we might have expected from Baisley. But nonetheless, great to see Lou back on the floor. 15 points tonight, 6 of 12 shooting, 2 of 4 from behind the arc. My man's getting some confidence. If you saw him on offense today compared to, I don't know, mid-last season. Mid-last season's not fair because he was like just starting to play with the team. But he's taken huge strides. He hit a 3 tonight with a man right in his face that was just unfathomable for him last season. If he continues to develop real, legit offensive tools along with his trademark defense, I mean, the value of Ludor's contract just keeps going up and up and up. And it's so exciting to see. It's so exciting to see him take these strides. And I hope we can continue to see it. I hope it can be consistent. I think that's the key for him. If he can be a consistent offensive threat to where guys can't sag off of him, like you see with Golden State and Draymond Green, for example. If Dort can bring the defensive presence without being that offensive liability, he's going to bring such a stronger dimension to this team than if he was just a defensive specialist. We also have to talk about Poku. So before the game, our guy Nick Crane, he was at the game. He was live up in the press zone, fancy boy with his press pass. And he noted that before the game, Poku was really kind of grabbing his right arm a lot. He was kind of touching the tricep area. He was grabbing it, rubbing it, seemed to be pretty uncomfortable. Went back to the locker room just a few minutes before tip, was still in there during pregame introductions, was announced as a starter, but, you know, wasn't on the bench to run up and high five his teammates like he would be in front of the empty Chesapeake Arena. Started the game, played 8 minutes, went back to the locker room and never returned. This is something to watch with Poku. You know, we didn't get any more information from that at the time of this recording. Maybe they're going to say more in the postgame press conference. Maybe we find out more tomorrow. Who knows? But as of right now, it's definitely something to monitor. 8 minutes from Poku when he was very visibly kind of grabbing that shoulder. Will be interesting to see what kind of injury that looks like. Again, going back to that kind of Thunder philosophy this season, if they're playing things very conservatively, depending on what type of injury this is, what's causing that, it could be a bit for Poku. And that makes me sad. It's no secret that Poku is a joy to watch on the court. I think I was reading the Tank Diaries from Tyler Parker. He's fantastic. You should go listen to our podcast where we had him as a guest. He was a great guest, and his Tank Diaries are fantastic reads. But he was talking about how you can't take your eyes off of him. And that's exactly how I feel. When Poku's on the court, I can't take my eyes off of him. He even, like, pretty early in the game had like a penguin belly slide out behind the 3-point arc. Like, even in limited action, Poku still puts on a show, and I'm here for it. I am all the way in on the Poku experience. Next guy we have to talk about, Tony Bradley. I love it when they get to have their not revenge game, but, you know, play their old teammates. That's what I'm looking for. Tony Bradley, traded to Oklahoma City from the Sixers, goes out tonight and throws up a double-double in, like, the sneakiest double-double of all time. Like, honestly, I'm not sure I even realized Tony Bradley had a double-double until somebody on the broadcast said, Tony Bradley has a double-double. 16 points, 14 boards, 3 blocks, and that is on 7 of 11 shooting from the floor. Solid night from Tony Bradley, getting to go up against his old teammates. A tough task when you have Joel Embiid on the inside, MVP candidate Joel Embiid, who had an MVP caliber night. And I think that it was a solid showing for Tony Bradley. Like I said, it was quiet, but really solid numbers for him. Best numbers he's put up in his short tenure with the Thunder. And I think it's always fun to see that kind of performance against his old teammates. Other notable stat lines: Ty Jerome, 12 points, 4 boards, 5 assists. Moses Brown, 6 points, 6 rebounds, almost a baby double-double. Maladone, 8 points, 5 assists. You know, the thing with Maladone tonight, 0 of 3 from the free throw line. Those all came on the same trip. And we talked earlier about the abysmal free throw shooting for OKC. And that really kind of sums it up. Teo Maladone, not that bad of a free throw shooter, but just that kind of night for OKC. That sums up kind of the overview of the stats and some of the storylines from tonight. The last thing I want to touch on before we dive into some questions. So if you have questions, drop them in the chat or hit that request to speak button. We'll be sure to get you on stage so you can ask it live. But I'd be remiss if I did not talk about Tortuga. Gabriel Deck signed, allegedly, from Real Madrid. The Argentine forward headed to Oklahoma City in the near future. Nothing's been formally announced by the team. Nothing's been formally said about his contract, though it's reported that it is roughly 3 years, $4 million a year. So if you're wondering why somebody would leave Real Madrid headed or in the middle of the playoffs to come to Oklahoma City, that's why. Money talks. That's pretty easy. But a really interesting signing, and one that I'm really curious to see kind of what the front office's thoughts are behind it. He's 26. Which doesn't sound old unless you look at the Thunder. The Thunder just stupidly young. Like, the lineup they started tonight, someone tweeted, let me get the attribution here. It is the youngest lineup ever, the youngest starting lineup ever. An average age of 20 years, 8 months, and 6 days. That math done by Warner West. I can't take credit for that. Also, Thunder Film Room tweeted that it was a significant amount younger than the starting lineup for the Baylor Bears in the national championship game the other night. So, fascinating place to be if you're the Thunder. But 26 years old is not on the same time frame as the rest of the Thunder guys. Now, that said, money, as we mentioned, the $4 million seems high. And the biggest driver behind that, as is pointed out in our chat right now, is salary floor. Oklahoma City was under the salary floor. That money was going to come out no matter what. Might as well pay it to Gabriel Deck. Why not? I'm interested to see what he can do. I'm a type of person that can talk myself into anybody at any time, especially young guys. I probably get too optimistic about them, if you couldn't tell from my swooning about Poku earlier. But watching some highlights of him the last couple days got me excited. He's got some athleticism. 3-point shooting sounds like is his weakness. So fits the you know, the classic Presti mold there. But I'm interested to see what he can do. I would also like to welcome all the Argentine followers to our podcast. We've enjoyed fans from all over the globe tuning in, especially, you know, our biggest contingent in Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, I'm hopeful. I think Argentina could hold their own. I think Argentina can do it. And as Silver points out in the chat right now, the Thunder Spurs, you know, we have Théo Maledon, the French point guard, Tony Parker protege. Now we have our Argentine forward. I just need to know, does that mean are we drafting Tim Duncan? Are we drafting David Robinson? Who are we getting in the draft this year? Interesting. We know that Presti loves his Spurs history. So who knows? Who knows? All right, let's jump to some questions. We have a speaker request. Let's get Dustin up on stage. Dustin, how's it going, man?
Hey, Justin, how are you doing? Thanks for having me up. Hope you're having a good night.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Do you have a question for me?
Sure, yeah. I was just curious. I'm sorry I tuned out for like the past 30 seconds. I got a message. I was reading it. But like,
no, you're all good.
Did you mention that we are also bringing over I think you pronounce his name Vasilije Micić?
Yes, Micić. I did not mention Micić. Micić is interesting as well. He was, you know, acquired last summer, but one of those acquired players that you don't really know if he's going to come over, if he's ever going to step foot in the U.S. Looks like he's coming. Will be interesting to see, you know, kind of what his role looks like on the team. This is my take on Micić and a little bit of Dec as well. I'm interested to see Dec play, but I'm a little hesitant because I really want to see the young guys play. That's kind of where my head's at. Like, if we're going all in on youth development, then let's go all in on youth development. Do I really want to give a bunch of minutes to these guys that are probably not part of the Thunder's long-term future? I don't know if that's super exciting for me. I think, you know, from the business side of things, from all that kind of stuff, I think that makes plenty of sense. But I don't know. I'd rather see those minutes go to the young guys that the Thunder already have. So it'll be interesting to see how they get used. Is it really just to kind of get them around the team, specifically with Micić? And then we also have Krejci, who, you know, has been around and has been kind of, I think, training with some of the G League staff a little bit, but seeing some of those guys, like, is it really just to kind of get them around the team and less so about minutes on the floor during an NBA game? I don't know. I did see on Micić's Instagram story today that he had a stack of about 50 shoe boxes of Adidas. So he's going to be well fitted whenever he gets to Oklahoma City.
Very nice. Yes. And a note on Krejci. Krejci's probably still rehabbing his torn ACL, if I had to guess.
Right.
I was very big on Krejci. I cover the draft every year, and I think nice. I think I was the only guy that I could find, because I was like actively searching for other people who had Vic Krejci on their big board, and I did not see anyone else with Vic Krejci on their big board. I had him at number 32 on my big board out of like 70 guys ranked. And interestingly enough, I dropped him to about like, you know, like 57 because of the ACL, because I thought like, oh, that's like very concerning. But I guess I, you know, overestimated that, and the Thunder took him 37. I was so shocked that the guy that I was so high on, we took, and I was so happy. But you
it's
know,
rare. It's rare that you guess right with Sam Presti. So well done.
Well, I've been watching the Thunder, you know, ever since they, you know, since Presti was GM, right? Like, I just kind of, my fandom of NBA lined up perfectly with Sam Presti's birth of becoming a GM. And but I want to say this, and I guess ask this. Bit of a, you know, I guess a theory of mine, but also a question, because I want to see what you think about this. I think these moves, right? Like, I understand we need to get, you know, to the salary floor, but I think, you know, I can kind of see something coming. I don't know. Maybe it's just an instinctual feeling because I know how Presti likes to kind of operate. And I think that we're going to make a big draft day trade. I just feel it coming. Hmm. I think these are preemptive moves. Bringing over Micić, bringing over Deck, as you mentioned. I think that we have a ton of young guys. I don't think we can realistically develop all of them, right? So I can see a team at the top of the draft, possibly, or maybe even, somewhere a little bit lower in the draft that where we want to improve our second pick that we're going to have, right? Say, hey, we think a Kenrich Williams is interesting, or hey, we think Darius Bazley is interesting enough to where that is seen as good value as part of a larger trade. And then we have, we're not worried about losing those guys because we have, a couple guys coming in that could probably, provide some minutes until we can maybe, find, the long-term solution at those spots in guys like Krejci or Micić or Deck and what have you. So, with that being said, do you think that this could be Presti gearing up for a larger trade, let's say come offseason or maybe on draft day?
Yeah, that's fascinating. With Presti, you can never rule out draft day trades, especially splashy ones. I think this year's extra interesting to me because of, like you mentioned, the two potential lottery picks that Oklahoma City could have at their disposal. I think, depending on where those picks shake out, getting something that you can package together to move up has always been something that I found very attractive when I'm thinking through kind of draft night scenarios. What I hadn't really thought about much until you just asked that question, but is fascinating is, what about other players that get thrown in as part of that? I think you look at, the guys the Thunder have on the roster. I think anybody is expendable with the exception of Shea. And then there's tiers here. Shea's not going anywhere. And then I'd put Dort kind of in a second tier by himself. Maybe Poku starts to tap into that territory just because of his youth. I could be convinced Baisley's in that territory. And then Teo's probably in that tier as well. Everybody else, though, is on the table. And I think when you look at a draft night trade, if there's a guy that Presti wants, if he's dead set on Jalen Suggs or Evan Mobley or whoever it is, then there's so many avenues for Presti to go acquire that player because of the capital he has, because of the number of future draft picks he has, because of just the number of, to your point, like kind of good solid players that he has on the roster right now, and maybe bringing over Deck and Micić and Krejci is part of that plan as well to give him just some additional pieces, additional assets, whether those guys get moved or whether they stick around when other guys get moved. I think the one thing that I feel confident in saying about Sam Presti is that he's probably thinking 10 steps ahead of what I am and what most other people are. So whatever these moves are, they're not superfluous. They're not just kind of like random moves. We may not fully understand the intent, but knowing Presti, it's something that's very calculated. It's something that's done with a long-term goal in mind, and it's going to be really exciting to see what that long-term goal is and watch it as it unfolds. Good question.
Hey, thanks a lot, Justin. I'll give some time to somebody else who wants to ask a question, but hey, thanks for hosting this room, man.
Yeah, you bet.
Always a big fan of anybody who wants to, come in and talk Thunder on the locker room. Cause
you bet.
It feels like I've been the only Thunder fan on locker room.
We're trying to get those numbers up. We're trying to get those numbers up.
Thanks.
Take care. We have a good question in the chat. What was Presti doing in the G League bubble? It's been reported often lately and kind of going back to when the G League bubble was going on that Sam Presti spent some time down there. He was in the G League bubble scouting players, scouting draft picks, watching Poku and Moses up close. There's so many different options to this. It's probably a little bit of all of those. I like to think that he was, you know, just really scouting the G League Ignite team. But I think a lot of that, if it were me, you think about this last year when, you know, talent evaluation was really so hindered by COVID. You know, they weren't allowed to travel internationally like they would have been. They weren't allowed to, you know, obviously not as many college games that they could go watch, not being able to see as much basketball being played in person. That the G League bubble, if he's trying to get a look at those Ignite guys, that's a great way to do it. I think also, you know, taking a look at Moses Brown, watching Poku in person, that's probably a part of it as well. But I think that getting a feel for those guys as they can play, you know, in the flesh, there's only so much you can take away from tape and remote evaluations, but, you know, getting a chance to watch some of those guys up close. I don't know if you're the betting type, maybe you go throw down some odds on Kuminga and Jalen Green and see how that plays out. But I think it's fascinating and it's fun to try to piece all these puzzle pieces together as we get closer to the draft. Comment in the chat from Charles Coriel. They probably wouldn't be able to move up without giving up a Poku, Dort, Bays, etc. A package of Jerome, Kenrich, and picks doesn't get it done. I think that's dead on. I think one of those guys, that's why I kind of separate players into tiers. You know, a Poku, Dort, Bays, if you consider that your second tier, then that's probably one of those guys, to your point, if not more, has to go. I think that's kind of how you can look at this roster of, you know, who's on the chopping block and who's not and who's expendable. It's going to be fascinating. I think, you know, the thing that you have to take away from this, if you follow the Thunder, is roster turnover is the name of the game, not just for a rebuilding team, but the NBA as a whole. Players just don't stick around that long. And I think that it's going to be tough as we get attached to these guys. I mean, I'm at the point where I'm going to be devastated the day Kenny Hustle gets traded. But I also know that that's probably a really likely possibility in the next couple of years. But I think that, you know, it's going to be part of the game. So it'll be fascinating to see who from this roster, when you look at it, you know, is it a Ty Jerome that sticks around? Does Fee stick around? I think there's always going to be some part of this team now that becomes a part of the next great championship contending Thunder team. Parting thoughts before I go tonight. You know, the tank rolls on. I think that's the biggest takeaway is this Thunder team, although they brought back Bays and Dort tonight and were able to, you know, it was slightly closer than their last few games have been, which is saying something. But it is the 76ers. They're in Eastern Conference number 2. They're a title contending team. I believe they're actually tied after tonight's loss to the Lakers with the Nets. Or they're right there with them if they're not tied. But regardless, the Sixers are gunning for a title. The Thunder are gunning for lottery balls. And they're in two totally different places. It's what we've seen from OKC now for a large number of games in a row. Really kind of gotten their hopes for a top lottery pick back on track. If you're tracking ping pong balls, Oklahoma City's done a remarkable turnaround in terms of positioning for, you know, getting into that 5-6 spot in terms of lottery odds. And with the stretch that's coming up, they're going to have more opportunities to increase their chances. Next game at Utah on Tuesday night. Then they immediately fly back to Oklahoma City for a game against Golden State. A few games later, they have a huge game against Washington, huge in terms of, you know, lottery odds. Then they play Philly again, then Boston, then New Orleans, then Indiana, then Phoenix. That's a big stretch. I think there's opportunities for OKC to continue to improve their lottery odds. And I think that, you know, if this team continues to trot out the rosters like they have been, if, you know, Poku is out for any extended period of time, it's going to be fascinating to watch, you know, really how the Thunder are able to control their draft futures through this final stretch of the season. I think that'll do it for my breakdown of tonight's game. If you don't already, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Make sure you follow the Uncontested Podcast on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tune in tomorrow night, Sunday night at 9 p.m. We do a live show every Sunday night, streams live on YouTube and on Facebook. We have a lot of fun. We love the interaction, just like tonight here on Locker Room, but then you get to see our beautiful faces. So be sure to hang out. We do that every week, and then post-game shows live on Locker Room after every single game. Lots to talk about over the coming weeks and months as the Thunder head towards this very, very important draft. Thank you so much for checking out the show tonight. And until next time, Thunder up.